All right. Welcome to the 2021 Candidate Forum. Tonight we will be hearing from candidates running for the school board, the city council, the borough assembly, and the forum is being broadcast live on KMXT 100.1 FM and streamed through the borough's website. My name is Lindsay Knight, and I'm your moderator tonight. Tonight's forums will be broken into several parts. First, school board candidates will introduce themselves. And since the school board races are not contested, each candidate will be given a three-minute statement on why they are running for school board. Then we will proceed with candidates for city council seats, followed by candidates for the borough assembly. Then we will move into questions, which will be asked by KMXT reporter Dylan Simard and Kodiak Daily Mirror publisher Kevin Baumgartner. Now I'll ask the media representatives if they would introduce themselves.
Hello, I'm Dylan Simard from KMXT. I've been a reporter in this community for the last year. I've covered environmental and fisheries issues for Alaska's Energy Desk and host Talk of the Rock and co-host The Lowdown on KMXT 100.1 FM.
Hello, I'm Kevin Baumgartner, publisher of the Kodiak Daily Mirror, and I have been here for just a little over a year, and the most important thing that you need to know about me is that I am just in love with Kodiak, love the landscape, love the weather, and most importantly, love the kindness and gentle spirit of the people.
Okay, thanks, gentlemen. Let's get things started with candidates for the Kodiak Island Borough School District Board of Education. Each candidate will have 3 minutes. As a reminder, candidates must stop speaking when the timer sounds. We will ask all the candidates to maintain a civil, courteous demeanor throughout the whole forum. And first, we shall hear from Judy Carlson.
Excuse me, but my last name is Carstens.
I apologize. I knew that.
Okay, I knew you did. So anyway, hi, everyone. I'm Judy Carstens. I have been a 35-year resident of Kodiak. When I first came here, I had children in the Peterson Elementary because we came with Coast Guard, and in the middle school. And since then, I've developed a blended family and picked up three other children, and they all graduated from Kodiak High School. And my spouse is Richard Carstens, who's also very active in the community. My occupation has been 35 years in the medical field. I am now retired, and every day is a Saturday. So that's why I have time to volunteer my time to basically educating our children on the island. Some of it is the memberships that I've developed. I'm very, very involved with schools, with the Arts Council, with the drama clubs. In fact, I'm an honorary thespian with the drama club, and my love for the children and the students just grows and grows. So that's my main reason for running for the board originally, and now I'm just asking for support to retain my seat on the board so that we as the Board of Education can pick up where we were before COVID, where we hit the ditch with COVID. We have picked up after COVID, and we have several things that we still need to finish. So I worked on this statement. I was like Dave and probably the rest of you. I was very nervous at first about doing this, but then I thought I'm just going to keep it simple, which is the real reason that I ran for the board. It's for the kids, the educators, and the community. I'm reading right from my pamphlet, because at that time it took me a long time to come up with this
Judy,
one
your
too.
Time's
so
up.
I'm just. Are you kidding me?
No, sorry, I'm being directed myself.
Wow. Okay, sorry.
No, you're fine. Thanks, Judy. Thank you for what you do. Dave Johnson, you're up next.
Hi, good evening. I would like to start by thanking Lindsay Knight for moderating, Kevin from the Daily Mirror, Dylan and the rest of the team from KMXT for putting this on. giving me a few minutes to introduce myself. My name is David Johnson. I am asking for your vote for the school board. I recently retired from the Coast Guard and will remain here in Kodiak with my wife, Jessica, while we raise our children, McKinley and Elias, both currently enrolled at North Star and unfortunately both in quarantine. I was born and raised here in Alaska. I first came to Kodiak in 1995 on a seiner and have loved our island ever since. After graduating high school, I attended the U.S. Coast Guard Academy. I spent most of my Coast Guard career flying helicopters, including six of the last 9 years here in Kodiak. The last two years I was in the Coast Guard, I had the honor of being the Coast Guard representative to the school board in a non-voting capacity. I was then given the opportunity to continue serving as a voting member due to the recent departure of previous board member Kelly Bell after I retired from the Coast Guard. I've been an active classroom volunteer through the Watchdogs program. I coach youth archery through the National Archery in Schools program and am a volunteer ADF&G basic hunter safety and archery instructor. I've also recently accepted a three-year term as the chairman of the State of Alaska chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Having a career flying helicopters for the Coast Guard was an immensely rewarding experience. I recognize how fortunate I am to have had those opportunities in life and credit the public education I received here in Alaska. I achieved the goals I set for myself because whether I wanted to continue with commercial fishing or go off to college, I benefited from a quality education in Alaska's public schools that prepared me for adulthood. I could not have accomplished those goals without the care and guidance I received from the staff and teachers I had growing up. The children of our community, both town and rural, deserve the same. I am running to continue serving the Board of Education to see that through. We are blessed to have a district full of incredibly devoted staff who are doing their absolute best in unfathomable circumstances, especially right now. Teachers in today's classrooms are facing challenges far beyond what our teachers faced and are doing so for much less in total compensation than our teachers received. One of the tenets of workforce management is that we must recognize is that if you wait until employees are looking to leave your organization to try and keep them, it is often too late or too expensive to try. Our staff turnover rate is higher than we would like, and if elected, I will continue looking for creative ways to retain our high-performing staff and make the Kodiak Island Borough School District the employer of choice. Our education system statewide...
That's your time, too. Sorry. Three minutes goes pretty fast. Well, thank you for what you do as well.
Thank you, and thank you for your time.
We're going to move on to the 2021 City Council Candidate Forum, but first we're going to have a three-minute statement from Mayor Branson, who's running unopposed, our amazing mayor. So, Mayor Branson, if you are ready.
Thank you, Lindsay, and thanks to KMXT and Kodiak Daily Mirror for sponsoring this forum. It's been an honor to serve as the mayor of the city of Kodiak for the past 10 years. This has been a challenging 2 years for all of us. The city staff have worked tirelessly to maintain all the services that we have come to expect. Police, fire, ambulance, ports and harbors, library, public works, and parks and recreation, while at the same time contending with a decreasing budget and funding. The council has each year developed a balanced budget that ensures that we live within our means while continuing vital services. We have achieved a goal of having 6 months of operating funds to cover emergencies and unexpected events. This is a huge feat for any municipality. This past year with CARES funds, the city provided critical funding to Kodiak businesses, nonprofits, and daycares. The city created a model that has become a successful public-private partnership in operating the shipyard, which has resulted in more activity and new jobs. We continue to work with the long-established fisheries work group and have established the Cooperative Relations Committee, comprised of city and borough officials, whose purpose is to find areas where the city and borough can collaborate, gain efficiencies, and cost savings. We still have major infrastructure projects to complete, building a new fire hall, replacing harbor and decades-old underground infrastructures, upgrades to water treatment plant operations, repairing roads, significant Brawna Park improvements, all this while using clear and transparent roadmaps that include public involvement and identifying funding. As mayor, I and the city council are keenly aware of our commitment to maintain and preserve our quality of life. We also need to plan for the future by establishing a resilient, diverse, and sustainable economy that attracts new businesses and industries that will support generations to come. We must also continue to align ourselves closely with the U.S. Coast Guard, which is an important part of our community. The Coast Guard has big plans to expand their operations in Kodiak, and we need to assist them everywhere we can. I see a very bright future for Kodiak with a strong sense of community, a diverse population and economy, great schools and healthcare, a strong military presence, affordable housing, and a safe place to raise family and their families, raise families and or retire. I'm inspired by young people who return to live here and raise their families. That to me makes a clear statement. Kodiak is a wonderful place to live. Thank you for your support, and please vote on October 5th.
Thank you, Mayor Branson, and absolutely, please do vote on October 5th. The City Council candidate forum will be broken into three parts. Candidates will have 1 minute to give an opening statement, answer the question, and so on. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to respond to the question. Finally, each candidate will have 1 minute at the end to give a closing statement. And I have this beeper on, so hopefully that'll help. As a reminder, the candidates must stop speaking when the timer sounds so that we can stay on schedule and please maintain a civil and courteous demeanor throughout the whole forum. So I turn it over to Dylan and Kevin.
We're going to be going in alphabetical order for these opening statements. So we'll start with Tracy Craig. Please give us your opening statement, Tracy.
Hello. My husband and I have lived, worked, and volunteered in the community for 29 years. We feel the people's voices need to be heard. We have a genuine interest in seeing Kodiak succeed, and after many years of sitting on the sidelines, listening to the meetings, reading the minutes, and conversing with people, I feel it is time for a new voice, and I think I can be that voice. I have had many, many hours volunteering on various boards, various organizations since we've lived here. I have worked as a stay-at-home mom, flagging in the canneries, United States Coast Guard, waitressing, now Providence. My husband and I were caretakers at the fairgrounds. My daughter was born here, attended St. Mary's. I help with the Doe Buoy food truck when needed, and I walk my dog on the trails. I have a common sense approach to issues, and I have a desire to find the best solution for all that live in Kodiak. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're muted, Kevin.
Thank goodness, I apologize for that. Thank you, Tracy. Next is Terry Haynes. Please give us your opening statement.
Thank you. Well, it's been a real honor to be able to serve the city of Kodiak for a couple of terms now. And I really think that Kodiak has a bright future. We need to be looking toward economic development, and we need to look toward infrastructure and to make our city work the way it's worked in the past, but to look for new economic things in the future, too. And what the city needs to do is be a good partner to private development and to give good value for the taxpayer's dollar. Because when it comes right down to it, it's the taxpayer that we need to serve, because the budget is where the rubber hits the road. You know, every darn year we have to go through our budget, and it's all about what you fund and what you don't fund. And I hope that we can continue to keep our budget in the balance as we have had in the last few years. And in the future, I'd like to be able to lower the sales tax rate, because I think that if there's anything that is more consequential to every single person in Kodiak, it's how much you pay in taxes. But we have to do that in a way that still allows us to maintain our infrastructure and have a vital economy. That's an ongoing effort, and it's been very, very, very great to engage in that with my fellow city council members. When we go through the budget, there it's always a little bit of tension there, and we go back and forth, and that's a good thing. I think in the end, we do operate in an atmosphere of mutual respect, and I'd like to continue to serve on this team, Team Kodiak. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Next, Rich Walker, please give us your opening statement.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank KMXT and the Kodiak Daily Mirror and Lindsay for being our monitor tonight. Well, I'm Rich Walker, and I'm running for re-election for my fourth term as on the city council because I love serving our community and look at it as an honor to help our fellow citizens. My wife, Julia, and I have lived in Kodiak for many years, and we have raised six kids here. I care deeply about our island home and am committed to maintaining and preserving the quality of life for our residents. Over the 9 years on the city council, I have gained insights into the complexities of managing a municipality on a remote island in the Gulf of Alaska. Working with my fellow councilmen and council members, the cities and city staff, I have learned how to develop solutions, solve problems, compromise when necessary, but always keep an eye on the needs of Kodiak. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rich. We're now going to move ahead to the questions. And Tracy, you'll go first with this one. How would you evaluate the Emergency Services Center performance in response to the COVID pandemic?
I think with the data that they're given, I think that they have done a good job. It's hard times and it's new ground, you know, dealing with COVID and having to change every day because the data changes every day. I think they've done a good job given the enormous task that they have. You know, they're going to make people mad no matter what they do. So, you know, I don't envy their position, but I think that they're just following the best advice that they're getting from the data. They're reading it and then they're just moving ahead. And I think they're doing a good job.
Tracy, thank you. Terry, how would you evaluate the Emergency Services Center performance in response to the COVID pandemic?
Well, I think Tracy's right. They've been put in a tough position and they're doing a tough job. And I'm thankful that they're doing that job. They've had to balance our public safety with keeping our economy going. And they had to have all these people come to the table and hash things out in the morning. And then for a lot of the time, then have some sort of announcement at noon. And I don't envy that job. And I certainly think that they've done a really good job. And I'd like to thank them for their service.
Terry, thank you. Rich, how would you evaluate the Emergency Services Center performance in response to the COVID pandemic?
I feel that the ESC has done a great job dealing with COVID and has managed to navigate through some uncertain times. Mindful of the impacts of our community and COVID, and is something that most people would never have anticipated in their lifetime. The ESC stepped in and made difficult decisions to keep our community safe. I am proud of their many hours of service and information to our community. My hats off for every volunteer that has spent this sleepless hours and also giving out equipment and testing in our community. And we're a lot better off by having them. Thank you much.
I'll ask the second question then. Terry, you'll be responding first with this one. During the pandemic, the Emergency Services Center, which is led by the Kodiak City Manager, has used emergency powers to make decisions on the social and economic policies for the entire island. As the pandemic continues, should these powers be handed over to a body of elected representatives? And if so, at what time?
Well, that's a fairly nebulous question, Dylan. A body of elected representatives? I don't know. You know, they're doing a really good job at this point. I would be very hesitant to make any big changes now. And, you know, as we were saying, they've had to make tough decisions. And it's a balance. You know, it's one hand and the other. You know, you want to keep the economy going. You want to have a normal life. But on the other hand, you don't want your friends and neighbors to get sick and die. So, you know, I think they've done well. I would be very hesitant to rock the boat too hard at this point.
Okay. Next, to you, Rich, the same question. Feel free, anybody, to ask if you'd like us to repeat these.
Yes, please repeat the question.
Certainly. During the pandemic, the Emergency Services Center, which is led by the Kodiak City Manager, has used emergency powers to make decisions on the social and economic policies for the entire island. As the pandemic continues, should these powers be handed over to a body of elected representatives? And if so, at what time?
You know, I think that the city manager and his group have done a great job. They've kept the city council abreast of a lot of things that are going on, especially financially with our community. What type of stores that we have for emergency operations. They've worked diligently with the government, the state government, and the federal government, finding out what's going on, letting our community know about it. They've helped disperse the funding that we, federal funding that we had to, out to businesses in town, and tried to, all they could to keep our economy moving forward during a very, very trying time. Thank you.
Now to you, Tracy, the same question.
I'm gonna agree with Rich and Terry. I think if you get too many people involved, it just gets convoluted and then no one ends up making a decision. Somebody has to make a decision. And like I said, you're not gonna make everybody happy. You're just not. And I think they're doing a great job with a very difficult problem that hopefully won't last forever. So, yeah.
Tracy, thank you. Rich, you're going to respond first to this next question. The city and borough have had on-again, off-again conversations about consolidating the city and borough governments. What, if anything, do you think needs to happen on that topic?
Well, that's a good question. You know, it's been topics going back and forth here, just like you said. But I'm in favor of the city of Kodiak moving forward with annexation of all property between the city limits and south to the airport. Consolidation has been brought up three times since I moved to Kodiak in 1989. I was very involved in some of these meetings at the time, and we were unable to show that there would be any savings to the community in most cases. Costs would likely increase. The city provides services, fire, police, ambulance, harbor, library, public works, parks and rec, sewer and water, and the borough is responsible for education, land management, assessing, and the landfill. And I feel that, consolidation is not a good thing for our community. But for the city of Kodiak and the community, I think annexation, it's a great process, and you have to go through the state, and they help you with it a lot more. And I think that'll be best for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Tracy, the city and borough have had on again, off again conversations about consolidation. What, if anything, do you think needs to happen on this topic?
I think that consolidation, annexation, and just staying the way we are needs to be explained to the people very clearly, the pros and cons of each choice. People get confused. They don't understand what consolidation really means, what annexation means, or if we should just stay the same. I think maybe just having at the auditorium, just explain, the pros and cons of consolidation, pros and cons of annexation, pros and cons of staying the same. And then people could really understand and make the decision. And I think it should be up to the people. And then if it comes time to vote, once everybody understands consolidation, annexation, or just staying the same, then so be it. But I just think it needs to be explained.
Thank you, Tracy. Terry, the city and borough have had on again, off again conversations about consolidating government. What, if anything, do you think needs to happen on this topic?
Well, it sure is nice to go last on this one because I think Rich is right. I think that we should be very cautious about trying to fix something that essentially isn't broke. You know, the city and the borough both work now. We need to be very clear about what we're doing going forward, because they're going to have it be very consequential. And as Tracy pointed out, it needs to be an informed conversation. And so far, we just haven't had that informed conversation yet. And I would add, it needs to involve the public. We need to have the public involved in a conversation in which they have information to work with so that they can have an informed conversation about what consolidation would mean for us, because it would be very consequential as far as representation, taxation, our services, everything. And don't think that what you think might happen with consolidation will happen, because we just don't know that. We need to have the information, and sometimes it costs money to get information. We may have to contract somebody to say, look, try to lay it out for us, you know, as the city is with annexation, try to lay it out for us, what it will cost us, what it will mean for the average taxpayer and the average citizen if we go forward with this. I don't think we have that yet. If we were informed and the public was involved, then I think we could have an informed conversation about consolidation.
Thank you, Terry.
Tracy, you'll go first with this question. The city has many ongoing infrastructure projects. One key example is the fire hall, a project that could cost over $20 million while the existing fire hall deteriorates. What should be the city's priorities for infrastructure, and how will they be paid for?
I think the fire station, as far as I'm aware, half of it's already been assigned, like they found a place to build it. And then it's just a process of figuring out the plans and what the final price tag is going to be. I don't think that that's done yet. I would like to be involved in that process. I've been here when the high school was built and the police station, and I've seen how some numbers can change. So I would definitely like to be involved in that. I realize we need a new fire station. I'm not 100% keen on the location that was picked, but I'll live with it. It's done. But now trying to just be mindful of the price tag is my concern, and I would like to be involved in that.
Terry, I'll pass the same question on to you. The city has many ongoing infrastructure projects. One key example is the fire hall, a project that could cost over $20 million while the existing fire hall deteriorates. What should be the city's priorities for infrastructure, and how will they be paid for?
Well, the fire hall is number one, and mostly because our existing fire hall is so compromised. We really don't know if it's even safe. I mean, we have those guys down there and all that equipment, and every single earthquake we have further compromises our fire hall. We weren't able to get an engineer in. He couldn't fly in to assess the condition of it. So we're going forward. But we're talking about plans to move our equipment to another location should that fire hall be unable to be occupied. So it's definitely our number one thing. And when we went through the process in the last, actually it's been a couple of years, of just finding a site for the fire hall, and I think it's fair to say that we didn't know it was going to be such a tough decision to make and such a tough job. And it turned out to be, wow, I mean, a real hair rent. But it turns out that having a spot that's in the city that's near places that might catch fire and near people who might need emergency services, all those places are already spoken for. And the place, I think Tracy's right, the place that we found is a compromise. But we were glad to have that. We were glad to at least have a site. And having said that, we are just at the first parts of the planning process. We actually had to go farther than we would have normally in the planning process, just to find, because we are in our to try to find a site, because we had to know more and more about what the building would look like to just try to narrow down what might work for a site. But now we're pretty much going all the way back. Our next goal is to get to 35% engineering, and that's a ways in the future. And now's the time for the public to get involved with this whole process. And it's kind of fun. And I sure invite the public to come to our planning meetings that we're going to have with work sessions and to see the different ideas that the engineers are going to bring forth and the different fire stations that we literally could have as a community. But I think it's very important for the community to step forward and say, this is what we want as a fire station. I think that so far, the city council has been pretty clear in that we want it to be space efficient. We want it to be safe for our firefighters, and that includes safe in and safe out, which is something that they've been going in. Basically, our firefighters have been dragging in all the toxic materials from the fires right into their sleeping quarters in past fire stations. We want to build a fire station that makes sure that all that equipment that they it completely comes off, they're completely cleaned off in the decontamination zone, and then go into their fire station. But having said that, we're 100% open as our plan for our new fire station. And it's kind of going to be exciting now that we actually have a site. And then, of course, now that we have to pay for it. You know, that's our next struggle. And but we need to try to pay for that darn fire station without increasing the tax burden. And that's going to be the real challenge there.
And now to you, Rich. The city has many ongoing infrastructure projects. One key example is the fire hall, a project that could cost over $20 million while the existing fire hall deteriorates. What should be the city's priorities for infrastructure, and how will they be paid for?
Well, thank you. Matt Terry got ahead of me on that one there. But me and we've both been on the city council. We know quite a bit about what's been going on here. We do have a dilapidated old fire station that every time we get a quake, the cracks grow bigger in the walls. And we have brought that up and have been talking to the city manager, and they're working on a plan. They have engineers coming down to look at it. But, you know, the city plan for the new fire station is evolving. And it's a roadmap that have been developed so we can provide oversight and direction to staff. The bottom line is we are not going forward until a new design firm is hired and 35% drawings are approved by the review committee of the council. The city council is committed to supporting a project that meets our needs and our budget. We're not going to build a $25,000 Taj Mahal. Thank you.
Okay, this next question is back to Terry for starters. And I want to just qualify one thing with it. We were focused on infrastructure in that last question. This one is designed to go a little more broadly. And what are your priorities for the city of Kodiak? Could be infrastructure, or it could be any number of things beyond. And which things do you think are currently over or underfunded? Terry, again, starting with you.
Well, I guess things are only as over or underfunded as the public thinks they are prioritized. You know, how important are they to the public? You know, it's what we put money in is exactly what we talk about in the budget process. And that's one thing I've come to understand is the budget is the most important thing that we do on the city council. You know, it's where we decide what our priorities really are and where we spend the taxpayers' money. And I think our number one job on the city council is to give the taxpayer good value for his investment. And so, I mean, as far as over and underfunded, one thing we need money for is Dog Bay. Our harbor across the way that houses so many of our productive fishing boats and our charter boats and people's pleasure boats is in dire need of a major overhaul. And, you know, we know it needs to be fixed. And again, the same problem rears its ugly head. We want that to serve the taxpayers, and we don't want to raise their taxes. And so it's an ongoing struggle there. And you know, I think it's a good example of pretty much everything that you look at that you spend money on. You know, some things that you spend money on are you know, fixing the holes in the dike. You know, we had a pump station.
Terry, you got to wrap this up.
All right. Thanks, Lindsay. But I think I've made my point. Thanks.
Terry, thank you. Rich, you're next on this. What are your priorities for the city of Kodiak, and which things do you think are currently under or overfunded?
Well, I support an economic development plan for Kodiak Island that creates resiliency while looking for ways to expand our economy, maintain our infrastructure, continue to provide critical services of the city without increases to taxes at a time when state contributions have been significantly reduced or eliminated, pursue funding in state and federal government along with private grant funding for the construction of the new fire station. I'd also like to see our new design for Baranoff Park ice skating rink move forward for the community. There's a lot of kids out there looking for that to happen. And, you know, the city has a very detailed process that takes many meetings and several months to review and approve a budget. The council works closely with the city management staff to identify priorities, address revenues and sources, and then set fiscal policy. We do this by working collaboratively to ultimately deliver a comprehensive budget for our community that will sustain us into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Tracy, same question.
I would like to have infrastructure. I would like to concentrate on the harbor. They need Wi-Fi. They have no Wi-Fi down there. They need Wi-Fi so they can have their own security cameras on their boats. So we definitely need to do some work with the pilings down there that are rusting, falling apart. I think we need to think out of the box sometimes. Going back to the fire station, Wasilla has built the newest fire station in Alaska, as far as I can tell. It would be nice to talk to them, figure out what they like about their fire station, what they don't like. If it was just built, maybe we can use the same plans. Maybe it's cheaper. I don't know. Sometimes I think we just don't talk to our neighbors that live in Alaska enough to see what they do. I know that our emergency services are short money. I think that came up. And I just wonder how Homer pays for it. You know, how does Seward pay for it? Maybe we just need to reach out and ask those questions. We're all in Alaska, we're all remote. Maybe we just need to ask around. As far as the harbor, it just is the number one priority for me. That's what I hear from the fishermen. They really want Wi-Fi. They want access, 24-hour access to the showers, to the bathrooms. They want the pilings fixed. I think that's really important to keep them happy. So that would be my priorities. And then just thinking out of the box when we have problems.
Thank you.
I'll move us on to the next question then. Rich, you're first up to bat for this one. Continuing with our questions about finances and the economy, we reached out to the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce for this question. Right now, Kodiak employers are having a difficult time finding employees. What can the city of Kodiak do to help solve the job crisis?
Well, that's a pretty good question. We need to open up Kodiak and get people back to work. There are a lot of shops in town. There's, you know, that are looking for employees. We need to let people know that there are good jobs still here in our town after the pandemic and during the pandemic. We just can't walk away and let our whole economy just fade away. We won't have a home. So, and the federal government is realizing nationwide that the high dollar to try to, unemployment, has made people stay home. They don't want to just go out and take any job when there's hundreds and millions of jobs available across our country. So, yeah, I think we have to make sure that everybody feels safe. Let them know their jobs, there's training available. And let's get working in our community and, building this community back up to where it was.
Tracy, I'll pass the same question on to you. Right now, Kodiak employers are having a difficult time finding employees. What can the city of Kodiak do to help solve the job crisis?
That's a tough one. I think once the unemployment benefits start running out, more people will go to work. I think having the quality of life, making people want to stay here and live here. I think the adding on to the Baranof, to the ice skating rink, is going to be a big plus. I think having hockey up at the high school is going to be fun. I think upgrades to the harbor will be nice. The chamber, I think, does a great job advertising that Kodiak is a great place to live. People say that we're losing population, but I just see more people. Maybe more people are just getting out, but I see more people at the beaches and on the trail than I ever have before. But I think that we're just going to start getting more people as soon as COVID dies down. You know, nobody really wants to move or do much of anything right now. So hopefully once COVID, you know, starts dwindling a little bit, we'll start picking up more people.
And now the same to you, Terry. Right now, Kodiak employers are having a difficult time finding employees. What can the city of Kodiak do to help solve the job crisis?
Well, not much directly, but the city can be a good partner to businesses. You know, if we look forward to being a good partner for places like Canna, making their marketplace downtown, and a lot of it is just staying out of the way, but some of it is being forward thinking. We have places like Gibson Cove and our municipal airport that are literally golden eggs ready to hatch. And a more diversified economy brings us better jobs. Better jobs are more attractive to employees. You know, I mean, I think that's what the city can do, is to keep in mind that they need to be a good partner to every different kind of business that might come along in Kodiak, and to be able to look forward to develop places like Gibson Cove and our municipal airport so that we have a more diversified economy. A more diversified economy has better jobs. And, you know, and it also comes down to having a good quality of life. You know, we take taxpayers' money also to provide for good, great things like runoff park, clean streets, roads that don't have potholes. And this just makes Kodiak a good place to live. That's also part of attracting employees who can come and work in our businesses. You know, I think having a diversified economy and having a great place to live, and Kodiak has a great recognition and brand name now. We need to keep going forward with that and make Kodiak just a place to come and to be and to work and I think in the end, that's what Kodiak City, the city, can do. Kind of sorry, fumbled out there at the end. Thanks, Dylan.
Thank you. We're going to start with Tracy on this question. The city currently has a 7% sales tax, which supports most of the city's overall budget. And now the state of Alaska is considering a statewide sales tax in the 2 to 3% range, which could see Kodiak residents paying as much as 10% in sales tax. If that were to happen, should the city change its funding strategy? And if so, how?
Well, I guess we'd have to see if that happens first, and then we'd have to see if we have to change it. I mean, we might have to change it if people can't afford to pay for it and if it is too high. But I guess we'd have to see. You know, that's kind of a question, if it happens or if this happens. Our sales tax is fine the way it is. I'd hate to see it go to 10%. I think that would be hard for a lot of people. And yes, I think that we would have to go down a little bit. Yes, for people to be able to afford to live here. It's already expensive. And with that added burden, I think that would be too much.
Thank you. Terry, the city currently has a 7% sales tax, which supports most of the city's budget. However, the state of Alaska is considering a statewide sales tax of as much as 3%. Which could make Kodiak residents paying as much as 10% in sales tax. If that were to happen, should the city change its funding strategy? And if so, how?
Well, we sure don't know what the state's going to do. And anyone who's been following the legislature, I think, is pretty much hesitant to predict about what they might do next. But that's right. I think the majority of the folks, especially in the Senate, would be more obliging to a sales tax statewide than an income tax statewide. And the reason that's bad for us and every other municipality who has instituted their own sales tax is that goes on top of our already existing sales tax. So as you just said, if the state did institute a 3% sales tax and Papa Barth 7% sales tax, our local guys are paying 10% now. So, you know, I've long been a proponent of lowering our local sales tax. I don't know how low we can get it, but maybe we can get it back down to 6%. We're going to have to go through our budget, which has been an ongoing process that we've been going through, especially vigorously over the last year. And I think we have at least two more years, maybe three more years of going through our budget to really shake it out. But I think that we need to look at lowering our local sales tax. That's just a matter of practicality. But I think that the state is showing that for rail belt residents and for urban residents, they would prefer to continue to push the responsibility of funding everything out to the municipalities, to every little city. And it's basically a sink or swim to every rural community. It's not just Kodiak. You know, when they said that they promised to pay their part of the school bond debt reimbursement, that is a borough-wide issue. But I think it shows the legislature is okay with making a promise and then just not giving you the money. You know, and it's a funky way of going back on the promise. It's like, well, we're not going back on our promise. We're just not going to give you the money. And I'm afraid that that's the kind of legislature that we have right now. And we need to really be realistic about looking at our own taxes when we're looking forward to what the legislature might do. Indeed.
Terry, thank you. Rich, same question. Kodiak currently has a 7% sales tax, which supports a good chunk of our budget. And the state of Alaska is considering a sales tax of as much as 2-3%, which could see Kodiak residents paying as much as 10% overall. If that were to happen, should the city change its funding strategy? And if so, how?
Rich, you appear to be muted. Let's restart his time, actually.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Well, you know, who controls the votes in the House and the Senate in our state? Of course, it's Anchorage, the higher population groups, Fairbanks, Wasilla area. You know, they don't look at what the decisions they make affect small communities in our state and along the coastal communities in our state. If it was up to me, they would have their own sales tax in their cities instead of going with a whole state sales tax. You know, if that ever happens, if they decide to go that way, we're going to have to raise our taxes to, I mean, up to the additional 3%. And, you know, and there would be people not being able to live in this community. I mean, all of the incentives that we give to people in our community, you know, people live here their whole lives. We're going to have to look at all kinds of stuff like that. You know, if we have to take that some of the incentive programs away, you know, these people won't be able to live here. So I'm very much against trying to lay everybody else's problems on the smaller communities. It's ridiculous. Even if they went to I was asked, I was in some meetings about this years ago down in Juneau, that they were talking about implementing a income tax. And it almost would be fairer to go to an income tax instead of going to a 3-4% sales tax in our communities especially. But I'm not for any new taxes. I'm for trying to keep our taxes as low as we can. That's a very difficult decision. It's going to be way above our pay grade and what actually comes down. I hope it never comes to that. We'll be working hard for the community to fight it and come up with some good ideas to counteract it. Thank you very much.
Terry's up first for this next question. Kodiak's population has continued to decrease consistently over the past few decades. Some Alaskans believe that a growing community is a healthy community, while others believe a smaller, shrinking community is better. Do you like the direction that Kodiak's population size is heading, or do you think Kodiak should invest in initiatives to reverse out-migration?
Well, you know, as I said before, I think we need to look at our community as being an attractive community to folks who live here year-round. Because one thing that's unusual about Kodiak is we have a year-round workforce for our seafood processing. And we're the only community that has a workforce that's resident year-round. And that's challenged at, if any of our three legs on the stool of our seafood processing is challenged, and if our community is not a nice place to live. So I do think that we need to look at a community that's friendly to, you know, folks who are working in seafood processing. But on the other hand, you know, I think there are two ways of looking at economic development or an economically healthy community. I mean, you're also economically healthy if you have the same population, but everyone makes more money. I mean, if everyone's more economically, you know, able and everyone does better, you're still in a more, you're still, your community is still going forward. You know, I mean, there's two ways to look at our community, and one is population and the other is having a healthy economy and a community that everyone can prosper in. You know, and I think that we should look at if we're going forward, if our median income is rising, you know, and if the anyone who works and lives in their community can have a decent lifestyle, you know, and can go to the park and can raise their kids and their kids can have a good education. You know, those are all very important, too. And I think those are benchmarks that are just as important as population building.
Now it's my turn to make the mistake of muting myself. Now to you, Rich. Kodiak's population has continued to decrease consistently over the past few decades. Some Alaskans believe that a growing community is a healthy community, while others believe a smaller, shrinking community is better. Do you like the direction that Kodiak's population size is heading, or do you think Kodiak should invest in initiatives to reverse out-migration?
Well, I believe that we need to keep moving forward as a community. You know, we have our base here as the fishing industry is, you know, our base here in Kodiak, but there's a lot more things coming our way, more business. The Coast Guard has just decided the Kodiak Coast Guard base is going to be the support command for the Arctic, which is going to be a big deal. They're looking at spending over $400 million to total upgrade the base. There's currently 150 jobs on the base alone, and with the base growing and more of a command decision to patrol the Arctic and everything, it's going to be making more and more jobs, make more subcontracting jobs here in town, bring in more investment to our town. Just look at the agreement that we just made this past year with the young company and their owner to take over the shipyard. They have turned that shipyard after 10 years around to making money. They are now bringing in crawly barges, all kinds of ships that normally would have went to Seattle. They're bringing them to Kodiak. The city council is working hard to get the rest of the bay over there next to the lift and the shipyard opened up all the gravel out of there so we can expand the support services for the fishing fleet. This town, I've been in a lot of small towns in this state that don't even have close the economics available to them. Kodiak sits perfectly right here in the Gulf of Alaska, and there is no way that we turn our back on our future for our kids and our families. Kodiak has a long way to go. It'll turn around the way it has before. That's why I said we have to support a strong economic development plan for Kodiak and move forward. It'll increase so much and so many good things for our communities and our kids. Thank you.
Thank you. And now to you, Tracy. Kodiak's population has continued to decrease consistently over the past few decades. Some Alaskans believe that a growing community is a healthy community, while others believe a smaller, shrinking community is better. Do you like the direction that Kodiak's population size is heading, or do you think Kodiak should invest in initiatives to reverse outmigration?
I think our population is going to boom. I agree with Rich 100%. The military is getting bigger. We have the rocket launch. I see young people in their 30s moving back here. I see my daughter, for one, plans on moving back here. I see lots of people coming back, and they're excited, and they want to be back in Kodiak. Now, I don't know if it's because of COVID and where they were living and all the restrictions. They just got tired of it. Now they want to be in Kodiak. But I see in the next 5 to 10 years, our population will boom. I agree with Rich 100%. We have lots to look forward to. It's an exciting time, and I hope to be on city council during that time, and I think it's going to be awesome. I see good things happening. Thank you.
Okay, our last question for tonight is, what's the best decision the Kodiak City Council has made over the past 2 years? What is one that you have taken exception to or would have handled differently? And we're going to start with Rich on this question.
Well, we've made a lot of decisions over this past, my past time here on the, with the city. You know, I brought it up in my last statement is that one of the best things we ever did is take a losing shipyard here in Kodiak that we're about ready just to walk away from and go out and find somebody that wants to come in, that's got the veracity to take it on and turn that around. And they have. They've came in here, and we are looking at doing what we originally wanted it to do in the first place. It went from being, you know, something that was almost going to be shut down to turning it around to a winner. And I can see it's going to be more and more in the future. You know, there's so many people out here. There's a lot of young people in this town that have grown up here. They have good ideas. They're looking for the city and the borough, you know, economic development, you know, to help them stay here, live their lives here, and grow their kids here. And that's what I want. And I know that's what a lot of people want. So, I mean, that type of thing. And then keeping, you know, a really good rapport with our neighbors, the Coast Guard, and, you know, bringing in new development. There are people currently right now that have plans to put in a lot more things in Kodiak for the future. We just got to help them get there. Thank you.
Tracy, last question. What is the what do you think the best decision from your perspective watching in that the Kodiak City Council has made over the past 2 years? And what is one that you have taken exception to?
I'm going to have to agree with Rich again. Hi, Mark. Marine is doing an awesome job. I love seeing those young people get out there and able to make money and able to stay here and support a family. It's awesome. As far as bad decisions, the location of the firehouse, but I'm living with it. And selling property to entities that don't pay property tax. I guess I really don't understand that, but, you know, it's probably not something that I would do, but that would be one thing that I don't agree with. So, and other than that, I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you. And Terry, what is the best decision the Kodiak City Council has made during the past 2 years? And what is one that you wish could have been handled differently?
That is a tough question. Did you come up with that one?
I can't reveal sources.
Okay, no, you can't reveal sources. Well, you know, I think the best thing that we do on the city council, and I know that this isn't a cop out, and that's to operate in an atmosphere of mutual respect. because, you know, we've been through a few things in the budget process just the last year in which things got a little flinty. You know, I mean, folks are really care about, you know, serving the public correctly. And I think that when we're talking about the budget, sometimes, you know, conversations, you know, get tough. But yet we continue to work in an atmosphere of mutual respect. And that makes all the difference. You know, and if you can have that, then you can have a good outcome in the end, you know, because you continue to think, you know, you continue to ask yourself, is what the other person's saying right? You know, which is another way of asking yourself, am I completely wrong here? You know, which is a tough thing to ask yourself. But I think it's something that if you really want to serve the public well, you have to be able to ask yourself. But when it comes down to brass tacks, it's been our planning process. We have done things in the last few years to look forward as far as putting money aside for maintenance, for things like vehicle replacement. So we're not surprised about this kind of thing. And it's just smart budgeting. And it's the kind of thing that it goes under the radar most of the time. But it's an ongoing process. It's one of those things as we continue to, I think, build a more and more robust budget process the more times we go through this budget and do it, you know, and I think we've gotten a lot better at that. You know, it's just the little things, you know, where we really plan for the future and try to look ahead for the city and try to keep our budget balanced with revenues and expenditures. And as far as a bad decision, oh man, you know, the worst thing we ever did was not sue the people who did the glycol, didn't flush the glycol out of the HVAC system in the police station. Because this has been an ongoing thing. Every community has one ongoing thing. And for us, it's been the poor policemen in their police station who just don't even have a system that keeps them warm or cold or anything. Because the contractors, when they first did it, didn't flush the system. And they just filled it up with the glycol and that whole system was dirty. And I'm just taking this opportunity to vent this thing since you asked the question. So thanks.
Thank you.
That concludes the question segment of the forum. We'll move ahead to closing statements, which we will again do in alphabetical order. Tracy Craig, please go ahead with your closing statement.
I wish to thank KMXT and the Kodiak Daily Mirror for hosting this forum. I have really good ideas. I look at problems differently and I find solutions. I listen to all the people that live in Kodiak and I feel their voices are not heard and I can be that voice. I realize it's scary to vote for someone new, but I assure you I am the best person. I have sat on the sidelines for years. I am passionate about public service. I am asking for your vote on October 5th. You won't be disappointed. Thank you.
You're listening to KMXT.
Thank you, Tracy. Terry, your turn, your closing statement, please.
Well, thanks, everybody, for doing this. I think technologically it went off really well, considering we're all in our bedrooms in various places. But it really has been an honor to serve the city of Kodiak. Kodiak's been my home for an awful long time. And I feel very grateful to live here. And this is my way of getting back. And working with the people that I've been able to work with on the city council has been very rewarding. I think that Kodiak really has a bright future. We need to continue to keep our finger on the pulse and to continue to do oversight and direction, which is what the city council does. And I sure hope that I can continue to do that. And I sure would encourage everyone to vote early if you can get a chance. There's still early voting. I think it's between 10 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. at the Borough Assembly Chambers. And half the time, if you go in there, you'll be the only person there. You can just saunter in, vote. And the great thing about early voting is that your vote is counted on election night. So your vote also counts. With the absentee voting, you had to wait for 2 weeks before your vote to actually come in. So I just want to encourage folks to early vote.
Thank you. Rich Walker, your closing remarks, please.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
We're doing good. All right. Well, I really want to thank you all for putting this on tonight. KMXT, Kodiak Daily Mirror. I agree with Terry. You know, we do this quite often here with the city council, you know, during COVID. And, you know, we have our nights as far as things not working properly here or there. But this has really went off without a hitch. And thank you very much. I've had 9 years of service on the city council. And I take my position very seriously. I take pride on keeping a good attendance record. I'm dedicated to be on time and study the council's packets and agendas carefully in order to be fully prepared for our meetings. I'm a good listener, and I have become familiar with many of the aspects of the city government. There are certain times that we disagree as a body and debate an issue, if needed, before voting on a topic. Knowing, however, in those settings, it is vital to keep a good result, make a good result for our community. I love Kodiak. I've lived in Kodiak for 32 years. Like I said, my wife and I have raised our family here in Kodiak and want good things for Kodiak and all of our citizens in the future. So with that, I would just like to ask you for your vote on October 5th or even prior and work into the future on the city council for good things to come for Kodiak.
Thank you, Rich. That concludes the City Council Candidate Forum. Thank you, Tracy, Terry, and Rich for participating and just for your public service and for taking the time to be with us tonight.
I've been asked to announce that we will be taking a 5-minute break as we transition to the Borough Assembly Candidate Forum. Thank you all so much for participating, and we appreciate you coming on today.
Hey, welcome back to the 2021 Candidate Forum. Finally tonight, we will be hearing from the candidates running for the Borough Assembly. This forum is broken into three parts. Candidates will have 1 minute to give an opening statement. Then we will move into questions, which will be asked by KMXT reporter Dylan Simard and Kodiak Daily Mirror publisher Kevin Baumgartner. The first candidate to answer the first question will be the last candidate to answer the second, and so on. It'll rotate. As a reminder, the candidates must stop speaking when the timer sounds. We will ask all the candidates to maintain a civil, courteous demeanor throughout the whole forum, and we will begin with the candidates' opening statements. Please note that two candidates, Eric Sustine and Sarah Sustine, were unavailable to participate, but they did send a statement that I will read. Read Eric, which I guess I better get ready here. Eric Sunstein, statement for Borough Assembly elected position. My agenda is to reduce spending to a degree that we can put raising taxes on hold and start reducing taxes in the near future. No more free lunch. Pretty short and sweet. Next, I will read Sarah Sustine's statement. I will promote Kodiak's economy by optimizing the community's involvement of our natural resources that exist within reach and assets that are attainable within the community. A sustainable economy is what is needed for the future. I will reduce taxes and reduce spending in Kodiak by offering community participation within everyday roles and or special projects in this simple budget plan will improve and elevate all our communities to meet expenses and spend money the way communities want it to be spent. My overview and observation of recent within Kodiak Acapello include all residents that have indicated a need to work together to minimize the gifts of our outside entities, organizations, and institutions. I will sum it up with one word that covers it all, perseverance. So that's our statements from our people that could not be here tonight. Then I turn it over to Dylan.
We'll be going in alphabetical order with the candidates at the forum, and we'll start with Scott Smiley. Please give us your opening statement.
My name is Scott Smiley. I'm a retired biology professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks for 11 years. I was a professor and director of a university function on Near Island, formerly called the Fishery Industrial Technology Center. My wife, Carrie Irons, recently retired as principal at North Star Elementary School. We have one son who lives in Portland and works as a software engineer. We have lived in Kodiak for 25 years. My history here goes back to the summer of 1974. I came here on a ferry. There was a sign when we got off the ferry that said something like April 15th to October 15th, no studs or chains. To this, a local wag had penned in paint or whips. At the time, I thought it showed the community had a sense of humor, and I still feel that way.
Thank you. Next, Dennis Simmons, your opening comment, please, your opening statement.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, Dennis Simmons here, running for my third term. I'm in for the good fight. I'm a semi-retired tree surgeon, explosives handler, excavator, operator. I've been a wonderful stay here in Kodiak in my 27th year. Living the dream, you know, you hear about it, and then some of us live long enough to actually do it. Giving back to this community has been a super highlight of my adult life. Rubbing elbows with some of the best public servants in the last 6 years has just been nothing but growth for me. Not afraid of making mistakes, and we're going to make them. I've made them. And it's getting back up, you know, getting on my feet, going back into the ring for the place and people I love the most. And that's it.
Thank you. Next, we have James Turner. Please give us your opening statement.
Most of you know me, James Turner. I have been on the assembly for almost 3 years now. My wife and I have lived in Kodiak since 2013, and we hope to stay here for quite a little bit longer. I run the Ocean Beauty, or the OBI plant in Kodiak, one of the largest employers besides Trident and the Coast Guard and the school district. So happy to be here.
Thank you, James. Moving ahead to questions, Scott, you're going to get the first one here. How would you evaluate the Emergency Services Center performance in response to the COVID pandemic?
I've been out of the assembly for 2 years, and I have only followed the EOC through postings in Facebook and in the paper. So far, I have no concerns about it so much. I'm really happy that Erin Ellsworth contributes what she does, because that's the more interesting information for me. But I don't have any problems with the EOC.
Thank you, Dennis. You're next. How would you?
Huge responsibility for our community. I think they have done an outstanding job. I certainly have comments on the next question in regards to who should be controlling it, but yeah, I can't jab a job well done. We have a city manager who returns his calls promptly. That's a big deal. I remember vividly being down on vacation, visiting the folks when the earthquake hit here, and at 6:30 in the morning, I'm seeing our city council and respond team, you know, on the job. That was huge. So, with that, I'm done on that question.
Okay. James, what about you? How would you evaluate the ESC's performance in response to COVID?
I would say that the EOC as a whole has done an excellent job. I think that everybody that's been speaking tonight has given everybody praise on the EOC, and I would want to do the same thing. I think the only thing that we would have to change with the EOC or the ESC is to make sure that there is maybe a little more community involvement, like an open meetings. We do have the Thursday meetings every week, and I think that they're great meetings that they give the public as much information as they can. but there are questions out there and the community needs to have those questions answered. And by opening them up, it allows the community to come in and ask the questions that they're really, really wanting to know. And that's the only change that I would do. Otherwise, the EOC has run phenomenal through the last 18, 19 months now.
Thank you. As a related question to Dennis first, during the pandemic, the Emergency Services Center, which is led by the Kodiak City Manager, has used emergency powers to make decisions on the social and economic policies for the entire island. As the pandemic continues, should these powers be handed over to a body of elective representatives? And if so, at what time?
Yes, they should be handed over to a body of elected representatives. And our leaders of the past had no business handing this off to any other entity except where it was meant to be, and that was the borough. I'm grateful that enough people have investigated this in the past. I'm talking about the citizens, the people that we serve, and they're disgruntled, and they should be. I supported CalCrow back in the day a few years ago when it was pointed out to our mayors that this has got to be reversed. Unfortunately, no assembly members backed us up on that. Well, here's a pandemic, and it's a real clear decision when one focuses on principles over personalities, like many issues that face the problem solvers. Principles do not dictate flavors or taste. They dictate what it's meant to be. What was the intent? What was the purpose? On principle, this is a very simple question to ask. The transition can be done overnight, but it is our responsibility to make that transition happen. Kyle's already resubmitted what he wrote up as a change of guard already. This has nothing to do with quality. This has nothing to do with color. This has to do with what this country was set upon doing, and that's putting heavy decisions into the hands of elected leaders. Thanks.
And now the same to James. During the pandemic, the Emergency Services Center, which is led by the Kodiak City Manager, has used emergency powers to make decisions on the social and economic policies for the entire island. As the pandemic continues, should these powers be handed over to a body of elected representatives? And if so, at what time?
Well, I think that the way that we have it written, I think that it's running just great with the city manager doing what he's supposed to do. At some point, I think that those powers should probably be handed over to the elected bodies, the city and the borough, to do their due diligence at whatever necessary means that they need to get things accomplished. I do think that the city manager has a responsibility as the EOC lead to stay involved as much as possible, and I don't think that we should take that power away from him completely.
And now to you, Scott. During the pandemic, the Emergency Services Center, which is led by the Kodiak City Manager, has used emergency powers to make decisions on the social and economic policies for the entire island. As the pandemic continues, should these powers be handed over to a body of elected representatives? And if so, at what time?
I don't have an answer to that. I don't know enough, and I don't think anybody else does either. I think that what we need to do is have a debate about the issue. Personally, I think you have to worry about partisan issues when you have government people. Elected people are involved. They usually have political agendas. You might not have that amongst the people that constitute the EOC, and so you avoid the partisan rancor that can develop. On the other hand, the people have a voice that has to be heard in this, and it's attenuated in something like a city manager, which isn't a voted upon position. It's an appointed one. So I don't have an answer to the question. I think we need more information. Like I said, I've been pretty happy with the way things have come down. I think that there is sense in having the city manager involved as opposed to the borough manager because of the city has the police powers and all of the other accoutrements that are necessary to deal with those sorts of things, and the borough does not.
Thank you, Scott. James, you will go first with this next question. The city and borough have had on-again, off-again conversations about consolidating city and borough governments. What, if anything, do you think needs to happen on this topic?
Well, there's a lot of things that need to happen. We need to finish the conversation in the consolidation committee meetings. We need to have the city come back. They took the summer off. We have started meetings again. Our next meeting is October 14th, if I can remember correctly. I hope to see the city representatives there. I think that exploring the options as the vote has requested. I realize that it was a vote that was a long time ago, but things have taken time, as most government things do, to move forward. But I think that the city's on the right path of annexation, exploring that as well as consolidation at the same time. I think it's a good thing for the people to have a choice in the matter. And both of those will go to the vote of the people whenever we're done exploring both options.
Scott, the city and borough have had on-again, off-again conversations about consolidating local governments. What, if anything, do you think needs to happen on this topic?
Boy, this is a murky one for me. I've tried to follow the consolidation arguments, but they're really kind of difficult for me to deal with. And there are six villages on the island. There's the borough itself, and then there's the city government. And does consolidation involve all of those aspects, all of those governments, or does it just involve the city and the borough? And what do you do with the villages on the island if you don't include them? These are big issues, and the Boundary Commission will eventually weigh in on whether we're formulating this correctly or not. There is another part to the equation, though, and that's that the city is an urban area, for lack of a better term, although for subsistence we say it's rural. But the borough is then covers the rest of the borough itself, which is mostly rural, with the exception of Service District 1, which is pretty much the same as the city. So why is that separate in the borough rather than in the city? And that's what annexation would involve. There's also a part of the annexation proposal to annex the land between the city and the airport. I think that there's still a lot of information that we need in order to get a good handle on what the right procedure is for this.
Thank you. Dennis, city and borough have had on-again, off-again conversations about consolidating the city and borough governments. What, if anything, do you think needs to happen on this topic?
By far the simplest question to answer tonight, we've been entrusted by the people to investigate this. I'm going to try not to get too grisly in chastising people, including myself. We, the elected, have no business talking about this in private or in public about our personal opinion about consolidation until the investigation is through. I was hoping that by now the city council and the assembly would understand that. Obviously, they do not. This is something that must not be tainted or contaminated, and we've done that. I'm guilty as anybody. Mouth shut. The candidates for these positions, by all means, let's hear what your opinions are. We need them, but not the elected. The people have spoken. This was put to a vote, and the investigation is not done with. Until that's done, this has got to be mums, folks. That's it.
Thank you. Scott's going first for this next one. What qualities are you looking for in a new borough manager?
Oh, I'd like my new manager to be smart, to have effective ways of developing new funding to fill the hole that oil left in the state and we haven't recovered from. I think also it's important to recognize that the manager has the responsibility of dealing with some 40 employees, and we're down another 11 that we have to hire. So personnel issues are going to be important, and skill in dealing with personnel is probably an important component in it. I think that we've seen in the past few years that a skill at contracts and a skill at negotiations are valuable assets on the part of a manager as well.
Thank you. Now to Dennis on this one, what qualities are you looking for in a new borough manager?
Great question. I'll tell you what, the easiest shooting off the hip one is one that returns phone calls. I so admire the city's manager because he does that. And that's a big deal, staying in touch with people. And it's a huge, huge time consumer. A manager that is involved in all aspects of the different departments, that's a big deal. You know, anyway, I'll leave it at that. But that is, yeah, it's going to be interesting going through, and I'm looking forward to it, going through the applications. And I hope a couple stand out, but they will. It'll be the one that's steeped in sending people down the road. It'll be one steeped in nurturing people that, you know, want to expand their horizons. Yeah, that's a pretty obvious and great question. That's all.
And now to you, James, what qualities are you looking for in a new borough manager?
Well, somebody that can communicate with staff, somebody that can motivate the staff and the assembly, somebody that can come to the assembly and tell the assembly what's actually going on so that the assembly isn't in the dark most of the time. The assembly is, you know, reliant on a new manager or on the manager, just as anybody would be when you go into a board meeting or, you know, you want to have as much information as you can get in front of you so that you can make the right decisions. And somebody that is thorough in making sure that that information is there is going to be important.
Thank you, James. Dennis is going to go first with this question. What are your priorities for the Kodiak Island Borough budget, and which things do you think are currently over or underfunded?
I guess I should have been paying a little bit closer attention to the city's question. Keeping that mill rate down, I'm so grateful that and it's just by a few. We should have raised it a few years ago, and that's an ooh and aah thing, but we missed our opportunity to do that. Now that things have changed drastically, keeping that mill rate down, it's the tough decisions tend to be a 4-3 on the assembly level, and this is one of those. You know, never say never, but that's top of my priority. Overfunded, there's been several things, and unfortunately, only in hindsight do some of those mistakes pop up, what would overfunded. I'm not necessarily convinced that what took place at the landfill was necessary. Now, that might, you know, tip off a bunch of people and think, I don't know what I'm talking about, but I don't know. I've seen a lot of things moving out there, and anyway, I'm not convinced that it could have been done differently, but anyway, it's easy to judge something after it's been done, but it's hunkered down time, and I mean, I'll leave it at that. I don't see a whole lot of construction coming up. I am optimistic about what our federal lobbyists were talking about things going here, but anyway, yeah, not prepared completely to answer that question in its fullest. Thanks. Okay.
James, what are your priorities for the Kodiak Island Borough budget, and which things do you think are currently over or underfunded?
That's a big question. If anybody's seen how I vote and how I push during the budget process, my goal is to keep the mill rate the same, if not lower it. Right now, we just don't have the ability to lower it. There just is too much going on. One of the biggest ones is the state not paying out their portion of the school bond debt. I think Terry mentioned it during the city meeting. That's an important one. That affects us all, and it affects how we run this borough. That's a huge chunk of funds that we rely on or wanted to rely on that we don't have. And I think that right now, I don't think that we've had enough money to overfund anything, and I don't think that we really can say that we are underfunding anything, because we just don't have a way to give anything else to any of the other funds that we need, if that helps you.
Okay. Thank you. Scott, what are your priorities for the Kodiak Island Borough budget, and which things do you think are currently overfunded or underfunded?
Alaska is dead last in terms of tax burden on its population. Sometimes we oscillate between us and Delaware. Delaware has a special mechanism with corporations that saves them. But this talk that we're overtaxed is not correct. We're the least taxed state in the nation. We haven't, the nation has been cutting taxes for government now since Reagan's era. And there are a bunch of things we can't do anymore. The biggest hole is at the state level because of the loss of oil revenue. And they've turned that around to be failure to support the school bond debt. But also, they cut back on the travel trips of the ferry system. So that impacts the economics of Kodiak pretty seriously. We don't have another Tustamina run until October 10th or something like that. I think we need to look at increasing taxes. I'm not sure that property tax increases themselves are where it is. If we talk about real property tax, there's also personal property tax. We have to look at other sources of income as well. What do I think is underfunded? I think that staff at the borough is underfunded. We're down 11 positions at this point. That means we can't do a lot of things that government's supposed to do. We do try to keep up with the school district. We've done better in the past than we have quite recently because of the fiscal issues. We need to bring that back up as well. Is there anything that's underfunded? Well, the other place that we raid is the repair and replacement fund that's set up with part of the Shuyak fund, I think. And we've used that for things other than repair and replacement. And now we have $1.75 million worth of damage to the roof at Main Elementary, and $2 million to $2.5 million in damage to the roof at Peterson Elementary. We keep piling up these R&R costs and passing them off on our children and grandchildren, and pretty soon those buildings aren't going to be worth keeping. We're going to have to build new ones. So there's a lot of silliness about tax, and I'm probably not going to get voted for because I'm saying raise taxes, but we got to find a new way to do this.
Thank you. Next question, James will go first. Continuing with our conversations or questions about finances and the economy, we reached out to the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce for our next question. Right now, Kodiak employers are having a difficult time finding employees. What can the Kodiak Island Borough do to help solve the job crisis?
That's a tough one because I struggle with that on a daily basis. Right now, I am shy of about 100 employees. I heard earlier the Coast Guard's short 150. I know that the hospital's short between 50 and 100. I know that some of the other processors in town are short the same amount that I'm short. I mean, we're missing somewhere between 650 to 1,000 people for employees on this island. And that is a tough, it's just a tough ordeal for everybody, not including all of the small businesses that you know, we have in this community that are, you know, mom and pop owned or, you know, small entity owned that are shy 3, 4, or even one person that makes a difference. And how do we do that? Advertise that there's jobs here. The borough's missing people. The city's missing a few people. Everybody in this town is missing people. Everybody's hiring. But how do we do that? Maybe help out with advertising.
Thank you. Now I'll pass that along to Scott. Right now, Kodiak employers are having a difficult time finding employees. What can the Kodiak Island Borough do to help solve the job crisis?
I don't know what the borough can do. This isn't confined to Kodiak. It's all across the country. The federal government is down 300,000 IT workers. This is ridiculous. And I don't know what the solution is. The knee-jerk response is raise wages and make better benefit packages. But that doesn't seem to work either. There's a sea change here. It's a big sociological transformation going on. I don't think we understand it very well, and I don't think we're going to be able to deal with it until we do understand it better.
Thank you. And now the same to Dennis. Right now, Kodiak employers are having a difficult time finding employees. What can the Kodiak Island Borough do to help solve the job crisis?
I say this without being cynical whatsoever. Prayer and meditate. We don't have all the answers, and I wish we did. We do. The taxpayers through their assembly does shell out, you know, significant amount of money to make Kodiak recognized and known. But yeah, I'm sure there is a solution, and I'm certainly willing to listen to some ideas. But yeah, we don't get to solve all the problems, but I know this assembly, we would take on whatever needs to be solved. So yeah, that's it.
Thank you, Dennis. Scott, you will be up first to answer this next question. Some have criticized the borough for not being responsive to the needs of villages. Do you agree with that sentiment? And if so, what could the assembly do to change it?
Do I agree with it? I'm not sure that I do, but I'm not sure that I don't. When I was first on the assembly, I was assigned to go to Larson Bay, and I went there and tried to learn what their issues were and try to help deal with them. We used to do that. That's when we had more money, but we have stopped sending assembly members assigned to each of the villages out there. There is the thought of having villagers participate on the borough assembly electronically. I don't think that works out so well. I think I want them to be there in person, not electronically. And that costs money, and we don't have money for that either. I think that the villages have remarkably different issues than the city and the urban part of the borough in Kodiak itself. And I think that we need to listen to them more carefully than we have in the past.
Thank you. Dennis, some have criticized the borough for not being responsive to the needs of the villages. Do you agree with that sentiment? And if so, what could the assembly do to change it?
Yeah, like Scott, I don't disagree or agree with that. I think any investigation prior you know, to knowing the facts is a silly thing to do. And I mean that, you know, the village could reach out to us. And when I say that, we used to have these wonderful forums, but unfortunately, because of COVID, our quarterly forums, which is a leadership thing, and boy, were they good for the spirit, brought in the leaders, brought in the people who were concerned about their village. That could still take place, you know, via technology. I it's a whole different perspective sitting on the assembly looking out than being just a citizen, you know, observing. But I think you have a pretty good assembly that's very concerned with what's going on out there. But without the villages contacting us, you know, I think it's wonderful that Delgado being from that village, you know, here's a great opportunity, you know, for that to serve. But we need to, you know, it's a two-way street. And again, I really support this assembly, and I think they would be open arms. They would listen. And hopefully this pandemic passes. I know it's going to take a few years to do so, but yeah, this death thing is real. And I think it's something that, and anyway, I think technology could eliminate a lot of the non-truths. That's all.
Thank you. James, some have criticized the borough for not being responsive to the needs of the villages. Do you agree with that sentiment? And if so, what could the assembly do to change it?
Well, I would say that I tend to agree with that. And that mainly has to do with the change that's going to have to take place is the person that we hire as a manager is going to have to be listening to the villages and relaying that or helping the assembly understand what's going on and what the needs are of the villages, because we don't have a lot of open communication between the villages. As Scott had pointed out, you know, we used to have designated villages that we would communicate with. We don't do that anymore. We haven't done that for, well, since I got on the assembly. You know, the assembly used to visit those communities, those villages, and we don't do that anymore because that was one of the first things we cut was travel for the assembly. You know, and we relied on the manager to bring the issues forward to us from the villages. We relied on the mayor to bring us issues if it was brought to them so that we could address those things. And we have not been updated on those things. And that's a big issue. And I think that the person that we hire in the manager's position is going to have to be diligent about communication with the villages.
Thank you.
Now for this next question, Dennis is up first. Kodiak's population has continued to decrease consistently over the past few decades. Some Alaskans believe that a growing community is a healthy community, while others believe a smaller, shrinking community is better. Do you like the direction that Kodiak's population size is heading, or do you think Kodiak should invest in initiatives to reverse out-migration?
I definitely think we should do whatever we can do to prosper Kodiak. And I think for the most part, I think the assembly does some of that. I think the city does too. We spend, again, holy taxpayers' dollars in promoting Kodiak, you know, as far as tourism goes. But I think that's where it starts. I think exposing us, you know, bringing it in. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Since I've been here since 95, it's gone down 2,300%. Now, personally, I can live with a shrinking Kodiak. I don't think that's a healthy thing for the community or, you know, or the archipelago as a whole. We're not prospering, we're shrinking. If it wasn't for those things that actually tend to add to our overhead, like the Coast Guard base, if it wasn't for the 65% government employment of adults here, which is also kind of our downfall, without that, I don't think we'd be as stable as we are. So what tends to inflate some things is maintaining others. It's it's a true conundrum of what can tear down and what builds up. But yeah, it's kind of a rhetorical question. But yeah, if I could push the button that has people coming here and helping us grow, prosper, absolutely, you bet. That's all.
And now to James, do you like the direction that Kodiak's population size is heading? Or do you think Kodiak should invest in initiatives to reverse out-migration?
Do I like the direction that it's heading? No. Do I see an influx of people coming to the island? Yes, partly because of the Coast Guard increasing. But that doesn't help the rest of the community. It does in part because of the families that they're going to bring here. They're going to be joining the workforce for the most part. I think that's a good thing, but the decline of the average worker in Kodiak, the decline of the median household is something that I'm very concerned about. I think that, again, like I said, you know, we're missing anywhere from 650 to 1,000 people in this community for jobs. And we need to find a way, whether that's helping out in advertising or whether it's job search venues, I don't know. We're going to have to discuss what we can do.
Thank you. And now to Scott, do you like the direction that Kodiak's population size is heading, or do you think Kodiak should invest in initiatives to reverse out-migration?
I don't think it's a question of liking or not liking the direction. I think that we need to understand the direction a little more. I think that in part the diminishment of population is due to out-migration of people who have finished high school and are going off to college. I think that we see a maturation in families in terms of age in Kodiak, and that's a normal thing. The school district's population has diminished slightly over time, and I don't think it's a big deal. The issue that James Turner brings up about 650 to 800 people needed for jobs in town is a different one. And the question that you've asked is, are we going to invest in that? That means that we need to find money, funding, in order to support that investment. We don't have any money because of mostly the lack of oil support for the state, but also other things as well. So if we are going to invest, we're going to have to find the funds somewhere. I think that that's an important component. I think that advertising is not going to do it. I think in large measure, this is one of those sociological events that we just don't understand at this point in terms of the unemployment issues or the lack of employable personnel and also the slow diminishment of population in Kodiak.
Thank you. James, you're going to get to go first with this question, and that is, our population is getting more and more diverse. Our recent census confirmed that. How can we achieve more equitable representation in local government across racial, cultural, and ethnic lines?
Boy, I wish I had that answer. You know, I've talked to a lot of people about running for office in many different cultures, many different backgrounds. It's a time commitment, and that's the hard part, that a lot of people don't want to make that commitment. I wish I had the answer as to how do we get them to make that commitment. I just don't have that answer.
Okay. Thank you. Scott, our population is getting more and more diverse. How can we achieve more equitable representation in local government across racial, cultural, and ethnic lines?
Well, certainly we celebrate the diversity in Kodiak as one of the more remarkable things, and a real challenge for everybody is all this diversity around us. How do we get people in other cultural backgrounds involved in government? Well, the first thing is to probably increase the amount of teaching in civics that we've apparently slowed on with the K through 12 programs in the state. Civics is an important component if you don't understand how government works and what government can and cannot do, then you're not interested in serving in government. As James Turner says, it takes a lot of time to do the job in the borough assembly. Other forms of participation in government don't require that much time, but assembly time is kind of precious. I'm retired, so I can do it, but I'm not sure how many people that aren't retired can afford the time for the borough assembly.
Thank you. Dennis, our population is getting more and more diverse. How can we achieve more equitable representation in local government across racial, cultural, and ethnic lines?
Yeah, I don't think it's a big secret to achieve that at all. And I really admire your Scott's answer to that civics class. Larry promised me a tour of our existing class, and I'm not gonna bash him until I investigate that. But that is so huge. Now, ask the young adult here what that even civics means, and I don't think you'll get the answer that you wanted to. People think I joke around when I talk to a group of natives or older Filipino women. The silent majority is filled with diversity of ethnic groups. The silent majority is 83% of registered voters. Whatever the silent majority, Chris Lynch said it years ago, whenever the silent majority decides to do something, there could be nothing but middle-aged Filipino women sitting on the assembly. There could be a mixed group of people on that assembly. But there's so many people that do not exercise that. If they band it together, I mean, let's face it, you know, 700-800 votes will get you on the assembly. And there's so many registered voters who do not gather together. They don't have a strategy together. You know, I remember very clear a dozen of us 7 years ago decided it's time for a change. And they got their friends. And they got their friends, and change took place. That could happen at any time. That's a real simple answer. Thanks.
Thank you all. Our final question will begin with Scott. What is the best decision the Borough Assembly has made over the past 2 years? What is one that you've taken exception to or could have been handled differently?
I haven't been on the Assembly in the past 2 years, so I'm not really clear. I think that the most important thing that the assembly could do right off the bat is pass the UMOT code enactments, allowing the borough to ticket repeated violators of borough code. I think also there's other issues that have to come up. We have to try to modernize the borough code. It's a huge document written over the past 40 or 50 years, and it needs to be cleaned up. I don't know of one of an issue that I really take exception to that the borough assembly has done. So I guess that's my answer, UMOT.
Now to you then, Dennis. What is the best decision the borough has?
You don't have to repeat. Go ahead.
No, go for it.
Oh, you don't have to repeat the question. You know, I'm going to agree with Scott on UMOT, and the consensus of the of the assembly was real hesitant as we got into that because staff became a little overzealous with the thought, but that needed to be done. And it could be changed at any time. I think the big deal, Turner's talked about it, I've talked about it, the big deal, we've kept a lid on that property mill rate. That is so huge. I know to full fund the school, it would be to raise the taxes. I can't argue with what Mr. Smiley said about our taxes compared to other places. We are not overtaxed, but under the circumstances, and I choose a lifestyle I do. I could be a money harvester, but it's not about me, about this community. I'm just, you know, we're at the crossroads where just the slightest overtaxed, and it's going to happen. The state's going to come up with a tax that we got to jump through. We got to hunker down and stable, but I think that's the big deal. The big deal is in 12 years, that has not gone up. Unfortunately, the value of our property has. And the downside, I won't go into much detail, but we're here to serve, and especially our elders. And to deny serving an elder who was denied with what I thought was reasonable excuse not to have his exemption filed on timely. I don't mean to butt up against the respect of the assembly, but I think that issue recently could have been handled a little differently. That's it.
Thank you. That concludes the questions segment of our forum. We'll move ahead to closing statements, which we will do in alphabetical order. Scott, please go ahead with your closing statement.
I guess I missed James Turner on the...
I believe James is afforded an opportunity to respond to that question as well.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry.
It happens. What is the best decision the Borough Assembly has made over the past 2 years? What is one that you have taken exception to or you feel could have been handled differently?
I think that the last couple of years we've been able to come to an agreement on the budget. I think that's the best decisions that we've made. Whether everybody likes it or not, that's one of my likes. As far as something that I think that we could have done differently, once the assembly votes on it, and I'm sorry, this is kind of a horrible answer, but once the assembly votes on it, I follow whatever the assembly says. So I don't badmouth any decision that the assembly has made. I'll back it up as far as it goes.
You're listening to KMXT Kodiak.
James, I apologize about that. Thank you so much. Now we will go to the closing statements, which we will do in alphabetical order. Scott, please go ahead with your closing statement.
Well, I served 1 3-year term on the Borough Assembly, and then for 2 years I dealt with some personal issues. I'm running for assembly again. I believe that my background is going to be of value to the assembly, in that I am an effective researcher, but I also listen to my constituents and try to meld the two together to come to policy decisions that are helpful for the community. The main technique that I try to use is compromise. I know that's a dirty word to a lot of people nowadays, but that's how democracy works, is by compromising and making the best decision that you can given the situation. So I ask for your vote, and I'll try to serve you well.
Thank you. Dennis, please go ahead with your closing statement.
Yeah, Dennis Simmons, shooting for my third term. It really is something that is fulfilled what I've always wanted to do. I've had the great fortune of serving with some really good conservative leaders here, Kyle Crow, Larry Ledoux, Mel Stevens, Rebecca Skinner, Dan Rohr. I've always boasted that our differences is our pluses, and I still mean that. James Turner is on that list of the conservative all-in, powerful education by these people, and I'm figuring out what the job requires, and it really is being all in, and I salute the people that are doing this for the good reason and the good fight, and have full-time jobs. I don't, I'm not ready to walk away from this yet, but that's not up to me. And I urge the voter or the potential voter, don't vote for me because you like me or you think I'm a good guy. Find out the way I vote. Find out what I represent. You know, it's unfortunate that I cannot support full funding education. That comes with raising property tax. I'm not your man to do that. We've made a promise. The assembly as a whole made a promise. When we figure out what we can and can't do with this COVID money, we're going to, you know, we promised the school board, we promised Larry that we would, you know, full fund if we can, but not at the risk of losing any more citizens in this community. So anyway, big salute to the people that get out and vote, period. And it's a shame Eric and Sarah couldn't join us. Friends of mine, I salute all the candidates that have run this year. I think they all could contribute to what good community leadership and problem solving means. So thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Dennis. James, now your closing statement, please.
Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to us blabber for the last hour. I appreciate you guys putting this on and allowing the public to hear what we have to say, even if they're not going to like what we have to say most of the time. I do appreciate everybody's time tonight. I know it takes a lot out of your schedule, and I want to personally thank you for doing everything that you guys do and keeping the public informed. I really appreciate it. That's all I've got.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, everybody. This has been really great, and I hope a lot of people are out there listening so you can make educated votes. Make sure that you vote on October 5th, and as you heard many times tonight, you can actually do that early. I want to thank all the candidates, Scott Smiley, Dennis Simmons, James Turner, and Eric and Sarah, who couldn't be here tonight. I want to thank Kevin and Dylan for asking the questions. I usually have that job, and it was kind of nice just sitting back and watching you guys do it, so good job. And Mitchell, thanks for helping out here in the studio. So KMXT, Daily Mirror, thank you so much, and over and out.